So we're going to jump back into this series, and I want to start with a story. There was a woman and a man caught in adultery, and there were some religious people that brought her to Jesus. And they said, hey, this woman's been caught in adultery, and the law says, let's get some rocks out and stone her. What do you think about that, Jesus? So he just kind of ignored them, wrote some stuff in the dirt, drew a picture. We don't know all the stuff he wrote down there. He leaned back up, and they're like, what do you think? What do you think we should do? This person's obviously in the wrong. They've committed adultery, and this is what the law says. And Jesus stepped down, writes in the dirt. He stands up, and he says, well, I guess go ahead. Like, whoever here is worthy of doing that, I mean, it's in the wrong. She's in the wrong. So just, you guys got the stones. Somebody start, and the rest, I guarantee you, they'll start throwing the stones. And they stoned her to death right there. No, they didn't. Some of you guys don't know the story. You're like, I didn't know. Maybe that's what they did. So what happened is they all stood around and realized, I don't think we should do that. Like, Jesus says, he who's without sin, he who's followed that law to the letter, go ahead and throw it. And they're all holding those stones and realize maybe we actually don't have the ability to do that after all. And they all start dropping the stones and they walk away. And Jesus looks at the lady and says, where's all your accusers? How come nobody's stoning you? And she said, they all left. And he's like, yeah, it's just me and you. And I don't condemn you either. So just get up, go. Sin no more. Many of us have heard this story, right? We've heard this interaction between Jesus, the legal experts, and this woman. And I have a few questions when I hear this story. The first one's, where's the guy? She wasn't adultery by herself, right, ladies? For years, like, oh, where's the guy in this story? He's just as wrong as she is if they're caught in adultery. So I think about that. And I wonder why sometimes, like, why did Jesus respond this way? Sometimes I ask the question, it'd be a good question for you this morning, like, who do you identify with in that story? When you hear that story, who do you ever see yourself as in that story? And why did Jesus handle that in such a peculiar way? Well, we're going to take a look at the Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to see how he addresses this particular issue. And by the way, today, this is going to be, we're talking about adultery, and we're talking about lust, so it's going to be a PG sermon. I'm going to keep it pretty tame, okay, but I just want to let you know this is PG today, so that's up to your guidance, parents, or parental guidance. So if you do want to take your kids to go kids, feel free to do that. I'm going to keep it pretty tame, but we are talking about adultery. So we're leaning into this famous Sermon on the Mount is what we're doing, and we're currently looking at these antitheses where Jesus will say, this is what the law says, and then he will take it up a notch and say, however, this is what I say. This is what the law says, but I'm going to take it up another level. And this is so important because often when we think about sin, when we hear this story, when we hear something about adultery, we hear something about sin, what happens in our minds is behavior and keeping the rules. But Jesus sets the bar much higher than this. And he said, in God's kingdom, it's no longer about following the law. It's about following the letter of the law, the spirit, not the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Like, why was this law written in the first place? What he's getting to is he's getting to our hearts. He's getting to our motives. He's getting to our wants and our desires. He's casting a vision for what it looks like to live this human life the way God created, the way he designed it. And that's why we're calling this series A Change of Heart, because ultimately it's about getting below our actions to actually what's going on in our hearts. And it's powerful. And he applied this same thing to murder earlier on. He says, hey, don't go around feeling righteous just because you haven't killed anybody. He says, what's going on in your head? What's going on in your heart? Have you wished they were dead? Have you given them the stink eye? You know, have you had these thoughts going on in your mind? He's saying, because if you're thinking these kind of things, it's just the same as you went ahead and done it. He's saying what's going on in our heads and what's going on in our hearts is the same as the reality that's going on around us. And now we're going to get to see him apply the same thing to one of our favorite subjects, sex. Not sex, sex. So he says, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. But I say to you, every man who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery in his heart. And if your right eye causes you to fall into sin, tear it out, throw it away. It's better that you lose a part of your body than your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to fall into sin, chop it off, throw it away. It's better that you lose a part of your body than your whole body go into hell. So let me proclaim this good news for you today. We all assume that as long as lust stays in our heads, it's not hurting us, God, or anyone else. But we cannot imagine someone as a much-loved child of God and a sexual object at the same time. Jesus compels us to live by love in our imaginations as well as our bodies. That's good news. Some bad news in there, but there's some good news wrapped in there. So we're going to unpack that. First, let me start with this. You've heard it said, don't commit adultery, but I say to you, every man who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery in his heart. Why does Jesus not include the women here? So earlier, women are like, yeah, that's right. But here it's like every man who commits adultery, every man who thinks lustfully. Is Jesus saying that women are just pure and holy? Ladies are like, yeah, we're good. We don't have problems. No. Studies actually show women are just as likely to lust. So it's important for us to remember this thing when we start off the top. Jesus is talking about a human challenge, not a male challenge. So why does he just talk about men in a situation like this? Or why does he point out a woman in another situation? There's a number of cultural things going on here. However, everybody, men and women being portrayed like in God's image, what happened early on in the Jewish culture, it evolved into this idea that women are treated less than, that they're less. Men are the priority. Women are just kind of their property to men in these situations. So in this teaching, if Jesus wanted to actually elevate things and include everyone, he went to what the highest standard was in that time was men. And this isn't all that surprising. Like, up until recently, we did this as well, didn't we? It's one small step for who? Man. One giant step for mankind. Like, we mean to say human, but we're actually saying man. We say this too, man is made in the image of God. But what do we mean when we say that? Man? We're like people. Us, humans, are made. And I grew up with this kind of language, but when I hear that now, it feels a little like something's missing in that. Like, it kind of messes with me a little bit because I know this is really what's going on here. But Jesus is talking about a human problem. All of us. Everybody say all of us. All of us. We're all included in this. So this idea of lust, he points out, if you have lustful thoughts, so why is that so bad? Like, really, what is it so bad about lust? Well, here's the thing. Lust is imagining a person in sexual and inappropriate ways. It's inappropriate because it's outside the covenant of marriage. It's inappropriate because lusting after a person, you're violating their inherent worth, who they are. They're more than a sexual object, right? They're a person. So what happens is you reduce their value for your gratification in that situation. So lust violates the law of love. You love a person, you assign them worth. When you lust a person, you take their worth and you give it to you for your gratification. We all assume that as long as lust stays in our heads, it's not hurting us, God, or anyone else. But we cannot imagine someone as a much-loved child of God and a sexual object at the same time. Jesus compels us to live by love in our imaginations as well as our bodies. Now, here's a misconception. Lust is not the same thing as temptation. Okay? Temptation comes to you. Lust is a choice that you choose. When we lust, we choose it. We choose to lust. Temptation comes to you, and it's about, what do I do with that temptation? Like, maybe you notice something attractive. Something pops into your head. You're like, that's not lust yet. That's noticing. It's being a human, might notice something. But what do I do with that? Jesus was tempted in every way that we're tempted. Jesus was sinless, right? So we can have temptation that comes to us. It's what do I actually do with that temptation? And lust is tied directly to adultery, is what Jesus is tying it to. Because biblically speaking, this sign of a covenant and a commitment in a marriage was sex. When you give your body, you give yourself over to somebody else, it was a commitment that's being made. It's the equivalent of saying, I do. Everybody say, I do. So if you have a lustful thought with somebody, it's like you saying, I do. But wait a second, I already said I do to somebody else. Exactly. That's the whole point. It was a covenant. Now, if you're single in here, I'm sure lust included you in this thing. Adultery includes you. You just say, well, I'm not married. That means that I'm not in this category. It's the same thing. I think Jesus is putting this whole idea of sexual sin at the highest level. He's saying this is the highest level it can go. So it's going to include everything else that's below that this is the supreme. So if you're not married, you might say that when you have lustful thoughts, it's almost like you're cheating on your future spouse. And in God's perspective, imagining sex with someone is the same of actually doing it. That's what Jesus is saying. He said this through all the thing. When you have anger with somebody and contempt with somebody and you wish them dead, you have ill feelings against them. Yeah, you haven't committed murder, but you've already done it in your heart. He's getting to the heart of the matter. So when he's saying, when you have these lustful thoughts, Jesus is saying it's like you've already done it. And I don't think that's an absurd thing. That makes total sense to me. Because Jesus isn't just concerned about what's going on the outside. He's concerned about what's going on the inside. And here's the reality of the life that we live in. What's going on the inside is the real life. It's part of the real life that exists. So when we commit adultery with our bodies, and it's an expression of what's going on in our minds. So if I want to get a glass of water, what do I have to do first? I have to imagine myself getting a glass of water. The imagination precedes the action. Already what's going on inside of me is the desire is, I want a glass of water. So when you're desiring something inside of you, you've already committed to say, this is what I want to do. This is my wanter. I already know I've made this commitment. However, I want to choose this. Now we might hold up because we're going to face ridicule and all kinds of other stuff. But Jesus is saying, I'm concerned about what's going on in your heart, in your mind, in your soul. Because what goes on here will eventually come out here. And Jesus' teaching here is saying, if you're imagining having sex with someone that's other than your spouse, we're engaging in activity that's going to move us away from God's design and life. Saying, when you think about these things, you're moving away from the things that God actually wants you to focus on. Have you ever been driving down the highway, like 67, and you look over at the car next to you, and maybe you notice something, maybe it's a nice car, and you're like, oh, that's a nice car. And you kind of gaze on that car. What happens? You're like, and they're swerving, like, what is this guy doing? Because when we start gazing in that direction, we're moving in that direction. And if we think that, oh, this isn't going to hurt anybody or anything else, when we start to focus on those things, and that's where our desire and our want goes, we move towards it. And when we're moving towards something like that, we're moving away from the lane that we're supposed to be in. So it's not about the rules. It's saying, Jesus is saying, it's about our heart and desire. We're drifting away in life when we choose to engage. So lust is about engaging in something. You're choosing to do it. Which brings me to a rather really big point. I take responsibility for my imagination body. You take responsibility for your imagination and what goes on in your body. Jesus said, if your right eye causes you to fall into sin, tear it out. Throw it away. It's better that you lose a part of your body than your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right arm, right hand, causes you to fall into sin, cut it off, throw it away. So is Jesus saying in order for us to take responsibility, we got to poke our eyes out and cut our hands off? Yes. VIP is going to pass around some scissors and some knives. Wouldn't that be terrible this morning? Here, Scott, gouge my eye out. It's what Jesus said to do. Jesus is speaking in the hyperbole here. It's an example is what he's saying. The way you know something is a hyperbole as if it doesn't make sense to interpret it in that way. One second. What Jesus is saying here is our hands are not the problem. Our eyes are not the problem. Does your hand just ever like, oh, I'm going to, where'd I get this water? I don't even know that was happening. Our hands, our eyes do whatever our mind tells them to do. We do whatever we're compelling our hands to do. You cut your hand off, that's not going to solve the solution. This whole antithesis that he's preaching here in the Sermon on the Mount is actually saying it's not about the outside, it's about the inside. You get the inside right, and these are the things that actually lead to the outside. Your hand isn't the problem. It doesn't make sense to say, you wicked hand, you wicked eyes. It's on the inside. You are responsible for your thoughts and your actions. And cutting them off and poking them out is not the thing. It's about looking at the heart. It's about getting your mind right. Temptation isn't a sin. How you respond to it matters. So one of the ways that I love is the way Paul tells us to respond on things is about our brains. And Paul says, from now on, brothers and sisters, if anything is excellent and if anything is admirable, focus your thoughts on these things. All that is true, all that is holy, that is right, all that is pure, all that is lovely, all that is worthy of praise. Retraining your mind. Listen, lusting is not admirable. It's not excellent. It's not noble. It's not lovely. It's not praiseworthy. It's not pure. So if you find yourself where temptation comes to you and you're saying, what am I going to do with this temptation? Rather than leaning into the action of lust, how about refocus on things that are pure, right, true, holy? Try to move your mind, shift your mind so that your mind can inform what your heart's going to do. And you don't have to cut off your hand or poke your eye out because your heart is pure and that's what's going to come out. So stop staring at the car next to you. Keep your eyes on this lane. Focus on that. It's okay to go, wow, a Tesla, cool car. Come back in this lane. Focus on what you need to focus on. We all assume that as long as lust stays in our heads, it's not hurting us or God or anyone else. But we cannot imagine someone as a much-loved child of God when we look out in people and say, these people have intrinsic value. We can't look on them with that kind of value and a sexual object at the same time. It's why Jesus continues to compel us, to call us into a new way of being human, a new way of living life by love in our imaginations and in our bodies. And if we're going to take this seriously, and I think we should take it seriously, what Jesus is saying here, that means that most of us in this room have probably committed adultery 1,000 times at least or so. Everybody look around and just be like, adulterer. You know, nobody wants to do that, do they? Yeah, you don't want to do it. You don't have. Here's the deal. We've all fallen subject to this. If what Jesus is saying is true, and a lot of times we will look at that as true, we just won't apply it true to us. We're all in this category. Statistics show maybe 1% to 2% don't struggle with this. So those people are not human. They're not on the planet, no. They just may not struggle with it. There are a few people that doesn't matter to them. But you can apply this same thing to almost anything else that you would struggle with. It's the same application. So all of us have sinned. We're all in that category. And Jesus said, he said this, why do you see the splinter in your brother's or sister's eye, but you don't notice the log in your own? How can you say to your brother or sister, hey, let me take that splinter out of your eye, while there's a log in your own eye? Makes no sense, does it? Let me tell you about the things you got going on wrong. Why I got a whole log in my eye. I've got my own pile of sin. We're not in a position to judge or to look down on anybody else. Paul reminds us all have sinned and fall short of God's glory. You might have missed it, but it said we all have sinned. Everybody say we all. We all. We all have sinned. And then Paul says in his letter to Timothy, he says, this saying is reliable and deserves full acceptance. Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners. Paul says, and I am the biggest sinner of them all. Paul says, I have followed the letter of the law to the T. Like he was one of the best rule followers. And he said, I'm one of the biggest sinners of all. Put me at the top of the list, at the very top of the list. And listen, this is so important that if we don't get this point right here, you've missed the whole sermon this morning. We meet each other at the bottom, not at the top. Our commonality as followers of Jesus is at the bottom. It's our brokenness. It's not our superiority. It's not that, oh, we're these Christians way up here and everybody else is down here at the bottom. Our commonality is at the bottom. Our commonality is brokenness. It's not about holiness. We don't have holiness. Our holiness is in Him. And why do we need holiness in the first place? Because we're broken. We've all sinned. This is where we are. Not once we get covered by the blood with Jesus, we no longer struggle with sin. We're all here. We're all broken. We're all messed up. We meet at the bottom. It's our common place. The church isn't a holy club. It's actually the opposite. It's a club of broken people. But for some crazy reason, sometimes us as Christians, we come together, we think that we've got a lot of things together because we learn some things and we see how good God is and we see these things that He's come and rescued us, and we get misunderstood that we're a holy club rather than a broken club. That's who we are. All. Everybody say all again. All. This is not a placement of comparison of sin. That's what Jesus is getting to. He's saying, when it's the heart issue, I'm just going to raise this up another level and remind that all of us are in this category. Not just so we know that we need Him. He's saying it's in our heart that transforms who we are, how we live our lives, and what that looks like. And if we don't see ourselves at the bottom, we don't ever really get to invite Jesus in and let Him do the transformation, because we feel like we've been transformed enough and we've reached this level above somebody else. We maximize our sin. That's what Paul's saying. Hey, all of you guys out there, yeah, I'm teaching to you. Hey, just so you know, these are all going to be captured in this book of the Bible, and I'm going to write most of the New Testament. However, I'm the biggest sinner of them all. However, I'm going to maximize my sin. I'm going to maximize my sin and minimize yours and say this is where we all meet in our brokenness. But there's good news in that. We're not just broken people. We're loved people, right? He meets us in our brokenness at the cross, in all of our adultery, all of our violent sin, all of our terrible thoughts, all of it. God's everlasting love meets us in it, loves us through it. He invites us into something, and He's done everything in His power to free us from sin. If we just lean in, let Him engage with us. Let Him do the transformation within us so that the inside can actually come out, rather than always having to hide the inside and think that as long as we keep it hidden, we're good to go. He's saying, let me transform the inside so you don't have to worry as much about the outside. We all meet in our brokenness. So let's go back to that interaction with Jesus and this woman caught in adultery. Early in the morning, He returned to the temple. All the people were gathered around Him, and He sat down and He taught them. The legal experts and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, and placing her in the center of the group, they said, Jesus, teacher, this woman was caught in adultery, in the act of committing adultery. And in the law, Moses commands us to stone women like this. What do you say? They said this to test Him, because they wanted a reason to bring accusation against Him. And Jesus bent down and He wrote on the ground with His finger. Then they continued to question Him, so He stood up and He replied, whoever hasn't sinned, throw the first stone. Then He bent it back down again, and He wrote on the ground, and those that heard Him walked away one by one, beginning with the elders. The people probably had it the most right. Finally, only Jesus and the woman were left there in the middle of the crowd, and Jesus stood up and said to her, woman, where are they? Is there no one to condemn you? She said, no, sir. These guys are bringing this woman in a posture of superiority. We've got all this stuff right. What do you say about this one who's got it wrong? And I don't know what he wrote in the sand, but I do know that it wakes them up to this idea. The primary idea here is that he wrote a few things in the sand and he just said, he who's without sin cast the first stone. But this writing in the sand, he must have wrote something that kind of messed with their heads to the point where they realized we're coming in a position of superiority, but we have no ground to stand on. And so are we. We have no ground to stand on except for the ground of grace that we find ourselves in every single day. It's why we ought to be the people who offer it up the most, to give it away, to realize we all meet at the bottom in brokenness. And what happens in a holy club is we're afraid to bring anything broken. We're afraid to put anything out there because of condemnation. But when we find ourselves at the bottom of brokenness and we're all there, we find healing there because that's where Jesus meets us, in our brokenness, in our commonality. Sometimes I want to say, like, who do we think we are? Not in the way that Brian mentioned. That was a good way last week. But like, who do we think we are? The truth is, if we take this seriously, what we imagine we actually do, we realize we don't have any claim to fame to make. We just realize we're broken. And we realize that it's the transformation of Jesus that actually does something on the outside. And that we have to start taking what's going on the inside and what's going on in our brains, we better take it just as serious or more than what's going on the outside. Because if we don't, we will drift away from this idea that God has for us in our life. And those things that we begin to think and harbor in our hearts, they will show up. They will show up because how life works. We're broken and in need of God's grace and healing. Jesus put so much emphasis on the inside because it has a direct effect of what's going to happen on the outside. We can't clean up the outside. We can't focus on the letter of the law. Jesus is saying, the letter of the law says this, but I say this. So what do we do about adultery? If you've already had it in your mind, you've already done it. So when temptation comes, let's begin to think on something differently so that our hearts can be transformed. And let's remember that we all meet at the bottom. Some organizations say, let's meet at the top. What do we have best? What do we have above everybody else? Where are we better? The church says we meet at the bottom. All of us meet here. What do we have? What do we have other than anything? We have sin and we have Jesus Christ, who has come and given us grace. So what do we have to offer to everybody else? Not all these good things that we have that we're better than. We just offer the same grace that we give everyone else that's been given to us. It's the transformation that takes place. Our commonality is not in our holiness, it's in our brokenness, His holiness. And when we assume that as long as lust stays in our head, we are hurting ourselves, we're hurting God, and anyone else that could fall in that trap. Because we can't imagine someone as a much-loved child of God and a sexual object at the same time. So Jesus compels us. He invites us in to live a different kind of life, grounded in love and grace and acceptance at the bottom, to give that out to other people. And we allow Him to transform our hearts. It will show up on the outside. I'm still working on this in my life. But when it comes to temptation, I try to remember what Paul says, and I try to think on things that are different, pure, holy, true, right. And the things that capture into my head, the temptation that's pulling me away, sometimes I just have to ask myself, is that pure, holy, true, and right? Probably not. I probably need to think on things that are right and true. And do I lean into temptation sometimes? Yes, I do. Does my mind wander sometimes? Yes. I pull it back. Paul says, get your thoughts in captivity. Get them under control. And I'm practicing to take my thoughts in captivity. I'm practicing to take responsibility. What I've noticed over the years is places that trip me up in the past, like beaches and water parks, where I used to get upset about the swimsuits, I have to remember, it's my responsibility. My mind, right? Where my mind goes isn't somebody else's fault. Where my mind goes is my responsibility. And I've learned over the years how helpful that is to not get upset at somebody else, but to take thoughts in captivity and remind myself that how I think and what I do with my thoughts, that's up to me. That's me. And this idea of meeting at the bottom, I don't get this right all the time, but I cannot express the difference in my life over the last decade or so of reminding myself that we are all broken and at the bottom. That has transformed my life so much to be able to give grace. And I find myself in areas that I would typically be so upset with people about opinions or whatever that might be, areas that we differ, that I just don't get all that upset anymore. Because I see them as common. Commonality is the brokenness. Not my thoughts or my superiority or how I see this subject or whatever that might be, because typically that's what we do. We go to all those things, and those things rise above everybody else, and we treat them with superiority. And this has transformed my life to be able to meet at the bottom. It changes everything. Our commonality is in our brokenness. So how about for you? This is really good news. How do you respond to that? Aren't you glad you don't have to cut off your arm, poke your eye out? A lot more fun than doing, I don't recommend that. It's so good and relieving that, oh yeah, that's not what Jesus is asking. But we have to let him do the work in us. Sometimes that's hard, but you got to let God do the work in you. You have to take responsibility for those things. And what if this? What if you were never tripped up with judgment again? Can you imagine if you just walked around in your life never judging anyone else again? Whether the cell phone's going off or anything. You just don't judge about anything. I'm just kidding, Charlotte. I'm just kidding. Before anybody else judged, I just wanted to let, we're all broke, we're at the bottom. But imagine that, like if you just walked around and you not found yourself in judgment against somebody else, comparison to sin, wouldn't that be freeing? It would. Oh gosh, we carry so much around. What if we were just a bunch of grace givers and just met everybody at the bottom? That would change your life. So let's do that. Let's be a community of people growing in our love for Jesus, growing in our love for others, and growing in our ability to reflect God's love to those people that we come in contact with in our heads, in our hearts, and in our bodies. That would be transformative. Let me close in prayer. Let's just bow our heads for a few moments. And as you sit there in a moment of contemplation, the thing I see on everybody's face for the most part is resonance. Like, yes. What I think I see desire on people's face. Like that would be amazing if we lived that way. Well, Jesus is inviting us into it so we can. We have to surrender to it. And often we have to surrender to that daily. So if that's where your heart is and you're beginning to imagine like, oh, what if life was lived that way? What could that look like? Then just surrender to Jesus in that this morning. Put your heart on the table. That's what I want, God. Father, thank you for the way that you live. You live all this out by example, God. You teach it in ways that we can see it, that our imaginations can grab a hold of it, and then you live it in ways that we actually see it playing out, that reminds us, God, that we can also live that way. Not if we try harder to live that way, Lord, but if we just simply follow you and we're just grateful for that. I thank you for the work that you have already done in this room over the years, God. You've transformed lives and grace has been given out to other people because of the people in this room, and I'm so thankful for that, Lord. But continually to remind us that we have so much growth that we still need to do to continue to live like you, and help us to constantly be aware of that. And every conversation that we head into, if we know there's a conversation where we might get a little fired up, God, just remind us that we meet at the bottom and let our posture be grace, when we head into conversations like that. Remind us when we struggle with any sin that's entering into our heads. Remind us, God, to reimagine, move our thoughts in a different direction. Help us to not act on that, but instead to respond in a different way, God. And ultimately, to not hide, but to be people who are free to live in your grace and give it to others. We love you. We ask this in your name. Everybody said, amen. When I started that message, I bet you thought, man, that's not going to sound like good news today. It's always good news when we open up the Word. Always. Christ always invites us into something good, a new way to live. So we're going to continue to dive into the rest of this next week. So come back. Right now, you're dismissed. Go have some cookies and coffee and conversation.